Campus FM jipprezenta lekċer organizzata mill-Istitut Agostinjan bit-titlu For Understanding is the Reward of Faith, Augustine as an Apologist. Il-kellima tal-lekċer hija il-professoressa Carla Polman.
Your Excellency, President of the Republic of Malta, Honorable Prime Minister, distinguished guests, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of the Faculty of Theology, I welcome you to the 11th Annual St. Augustine Lecture. This year's guest speaker is Professor Carla Polman from the Department of Classics at the University of St. Andrews, Scotland. Professor Polman studied classics, pedagogy, and theology at the universities of Tübingen, Munich, Cambridge, and Bochum. In 1990, she completed her PhD on early Christian poetry at the University of Bochum, and in 1994, her habilitation on St. Augustine's hermeneutics at the University of Bochum, of Constance. After her research experience at the University College in London, as an Alexander von Humboldt Fellow, she was offered in 1995 the Chair of Classics at the University of St. Andrews. Since then, she was invited as a visiting scholar at the University of Vienna, at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada, at the Institute of Advanced Study at Princeton University, as a Charter Fellow at Wolfson College, Oxford, and as a Fellow in Residence at the Netherlands Institute for Advanced Study. Professor Polman has published widely in the field of classics and the history of early Christianity. One of her current ambitious research projects is the investigation of the impact of St. Augustine's thought after his death in 430 till present times. She has been awarded a major research grant from Leverhulme Trust to explore this vast topic with the help of two postdoctoral researchers, three PhD students, and a big team of interdisciplinary and international scholars. The aim of this project is to publish an encyclopedia which documents Augustine's impact not only on theology, but also in other fields such as political theory, ethics, and literary imagination, covering both individual thinkers like Luther and Galileo, and thematic issues like war and miracles. This evening's lecture is entitled For Understanding is the Reward of Faith, Augustine as Apologist, which focuses on Augustine's techniques and attitudes in exchange with opponents, mainly pagans, but also heretical thinkers or doubting Catholics. It will mainly concentrate on his famous book, The City of God, and his less well-known but equally ambitious literary commentary entitled De Genesi ad Literam. After the year 391, when St. Augustine was ordained priest, and even more so after 396, the year he was consecrated bishop of Hippo, he felt the weight of the great responsibility now laid upon his shoulders, namely that of providing solid food for his flock. His main concern was to help others seeking truth to avoid the mistakes of his early misunderstanding of the demands of Christian faith, as described in the prophetic words of Isaiah, "Unless you believe, you will not understand." Augustine later on stressed that an essential feature of wisdom in the sense of sapienza, and even knowledge in the sense of scienza, is primarily knowledge of Christ. Lack of such knowledge, Augustine argued in his Confessions and later on in his monumental work, The City of God, explains why the Platonists, for instance, for all their intellectual achievements, were ultimately unable to recover their fatherland. Neither would mere introspection would lead towards such an endeavor. Reflecting on his own experience, he discovered that it is not reason alone which leads to full understanding, but it is faith which enriches reason and leads to wisdom and truth. I now invite Professor Carla Poleman to deliver this evening's lecture.
Your Excellency, Honorable Prime Minister, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, it is a great pleasure for me to deliver the 11th annual St. Augustine Lecture here in Malta. Historically speaking, Augustine lived in a period when Christian apologetics as an argumentative defense of Christianity against pagan criticism became more and more obsolete. Christianity had become the established and only acknowledged religion of the Roman Empire in 395 with the Edict of Theodosius. Augustine's liminal position as apologist is evident when one looks at established handbooks of apologetic writers, where he either does not occur at all, or as one of the very last opponents of this intellectual tradition. Augustine is then often called the last of the Latin apologists, and his City of God the culmination that concluded the tradition. However, although the historical necessity to develop apologetic arguments against a pagan environment in the strict sense of the word became obsolete around 400, the methods, maybe more than the specific arguments, used by apologetic writers remained relevant in all sorts of circumstances and contexts, especially when there was a sense of facing a crisis. This is why we have also scholarly overviews where apologetics can be surveyed throughout the centuries beyond 400 AD, or publications where apologetics can indeed be an active discipline, still creatively producing arguments that seek to relate the biblical revelation to the world around us. Accordingly, in German Catholic theology since the 19th century, the term Fundamentaltheologie, foundational theology, has been used, denoting a sub-discipline of theology that rationally and scientifically defends aspects of the Christian faith against any criticism from outside and partly later also from inside the Christian community. Augustine's liminal position as regards apologetics becomes also evident when one looks at some standard works dealing with his thought. It is noteworthy that Gerald Bonner, in his well-known book St. Augustine of Hippo, Life and Controversies, deals with Augustine's polemic against heretics, but the anti-pagan angle is completely missing. John O'Mara, in his book on the City of God, emphasizes that despite the fact that paganism was not dominant anymore, there was still a persistent or renewed feeling of crisis. Augustine's answer to this is a positive one, claiming the eventual fulfillment of a meaningful human history. But one can call him a master of delaying everybody's certainty about this by cultivating the Christian principle of uncertainty. He emphasizes the anthropological fact of persistent existential uncertainty, countered by the Christian principle of eschatological suspense, and claims that this uncertainty in this life should serve to make human beings better and to exercise their faculties of love and understanding to the full. In this, apologetics can be described in two different ways. A, by way of content, as consisting of a set of arguments or parts thereof that are directed against the surrounding critical environment and are linked to a small variety of literary genres, sometimes, but not necessarily, entitled apologia. Before Augustine, such apologetic writings and their arguments were often triggered by a specific event or crisis and dealt with a certain potentially ephemeral issue. In the case of Augustine's City of God, the triggering crisis is the sack of Rome in 410 by the Goths. But what he wrote gained universal dimensions. Themes that reoccur in apologetic writings throughout are the morality and loyalty of Christians towards the state, faith versus reason, Christianity's claim of universal truth, the proof of greater age that claimed that Christianity had its roots in the Old Testament and was therefore older and better than the pagan thought, especially pagan philosophy. Indeed, apologetics would claim that pagan philosophers had been inspired or had plagiarized scripture for their thinking, which showed sometimes striking parallels with Christian thought. Some turned necessity into a virtue and claimed that the newness of Christianity was actually an advantage. Apologetics attempted to find answers to the criticism that the Old Testament lacked literary quality, that it had a bad morality, and that its prophecies were invalid. Secondly, apologetics can be described as a method or strategy based on principles of rhetoric that can be part of practically any literary genre to defend or expound Christian tenets of faith in the face of criticism. This is analogous to, for instance, satire, which can be both a literary genre in itself and a literary strategy in other genres. Such a wider definition of apologia as a strategy is already found in Eusebius and is seen as a fulfillment of 1 Peter 3:15, be always prepared to give justification, apologia, to anyone who asks for a rational reason, logos, regarding the hope that is in you. This verse, 1 Peter 3:15, can be called the biblical mantra of apologetics. Generally, it is more the method than the content that is considered to be the lasting achievement of the early apologists. Christian apologists of modern times must remain eternally indebted to the fathers of the Church for their boldness in seeking to relate the biblical revelation to the whole of human culture, human philosophy, and human history. In the following, we intend to illustrate all these issues by looking at two distinctly different works of Augustine, namely his City of God, which is declared to be an apology as a genre. And Augustine explicitly states this at the beginning of his work. I have undertaken to defend the City of God against those who favor their own gods above her founder. And secondly, the partly simultaneously written literal commentary on Genesis, De Genesi ad Literam, which is a commentary as a genre with a highly scientific claim, which makes it, by way of method, an apologetic work. The City of God employs, with its bipartite structure of 10 negative books, followed by 12 positive books, an established apologetic technique. The first part, the negative books, attack and destroy the pagan belief in gods. Books 1 to 5 refute the belief in those gods that the belief in those gods is useful for this life, that is, they refute pagan religion. Books 6 to 10 refute that the belief in pagan gods is useful for the life to come, that is, they refute pagan philosophy, especially Neoplatonism. The positive second part of the City of God is an assertive demonstration that both this life and the life to come are governed by the Christian God, and that reality is shaped according to biblical principles and narratives. This second part is subdivided in books 11 to 14, which describe the beginning of the world according to Genesis, books 15 to 18, which deal with the actual history of the world from post-paradise to the present, and are predominantly based on biblical narrative, and books 19 to 22, which describe the end of the world with final judgment, hell, and heaven. One has to make a careful distinction in the City of God between the argumentative opponents, which are fictitious, educated pagans criticizing Christianity, and are predominantly mentioned in the third person, and the communicative addressee of the City of God, who are accosted in the second person and assumed to be educated Christians. This means that presumably for the first time in the apologetic tradition, the addressee is envisaged as being predominantly Christian, whereas before, the targeted addressee was in the first instance the pagan opponent, although the work could, of course, also be read by Christians to equip them with arguments against pagan critique. Conversely, despite its primarily intended Christian addressee, the City of God could and indeed appears to have been read by pagans as well. In Book 5 of the City of God, Augustine mentions people who, after having read the first three books of his City of God, were preparing a counterstatement and were waiting for a time when they could publish this without risk. Of course, the pagan opponent presenting specific critical arguments against Christianity has to be refuted point by point. In the case of the City of God, this opponent is a fictitious character Augustine uses to tackle any possible arguments against Christianity he can think of, and that Christians might encounter in real life. Thus, the City of God is an encyclopedic, universal super-apology comprising many arguments of earlier Christian writers. Augustine's approach, however, is rather subjective and psychological than objective and systematic. A careful analysis of the whole of the City of God shows that Augustine never loses sight of his predominantly pagan argumentative opponents, not even in the last books of his work. Therefore, it is wrong if some scholars state that the second part of the City of God is not really part of the apologetic effort. On the contrary, the argumentative strategy of the entire work is informed by the awareness that there is a broad spectrum of intellectual criticism from highly educated pagans with a long philosophical and antiquarian tradition, which is potentially not only damaging Christianity by making it unattractive for potential newcomers, but may also discourage already converted Christians by making them doubtful about whether they adhere to the right religion. At the same time, however, it is clear that Augustine argues from a Christian perspective, emphasizing our Christian authors, our true mediator, i.e., Jesus Christ, and he apostrophizes our adversaries, which he normally uses for various types of pagans, but sometimes also misguided Christians that threaten to undermine the true Christian faith from within. At other times, Augustine names the opponents either to quote them in support of his own opinion against other pagans, thus playing off pagans against other pagans, an attractive apologetic technique, or in order to refute them directly. Sometimes he affirmatively states his own position. Most tricky are situations where Christians follow pagan criticism or are tempted by it. For instance, he says, there are not a few Christians who have a liking for Plato. And in a way, he reflects thereby his own position, especially in his younger years, where he admits that Platonism for him for a long time seemed to be the path of truth. Sometimes it's not entirely clear whether he has pagans or Christians in mind, or both, especially when it comes to controversial interpretations of the Bible. This is, of course, all facilitated by his dominant technique of not precisely demarcating the exact nature of his opponent. Nevertheless, Augustine is keen to prove things, to give evidence or examples from nature, adhering to good, rational, apologetic method. The structure of De Genesi ad Literam is significantly different from that of the City of God, as it is not governed by the logic of the argument, but by the sequence of the biblical text. The biblical text is here at the center of attention and not just a means as in the City of God, whereas the City of God is an apologetic work with an interpretative edge. The De Genesi ad Literam is an interpretative work with an apologetic edge. Books 1 to 4 deal with the first account of creation. Book 5 deals with the meaning and differentiation of the two accounts of creation. And Books 6 to 12 concentrate on the second account of creation. Books 6 and 7 deal with Genesis 2:7 alone, i.e. the creation of Adam from dust, and the question of the human soul. So not every verse receives equal amount of exegetical attention, and there are extensive digressions. Nevertheless, generally speaking, the argumentative strategy in De Genesi ad Literam is formally surprisingly similar to that of the City of God. This is already made clear in Book 1 at the very beginning, where Augustine announces programmatically to assert and defend the creation story in Genesis as a faithful historical account. Like in the City of God, there are frequent rhetorical questions which are meant to move the argument further and sometimes indirectly weaken a certain position without really having an argument against it. Phrases like, "Who would be so insane as to believe this?" or "The authority of Scripture indubitably teaches," support this technique. As a whole, such phrases are relatively rare, but they are significant. I choose to call this a technique of argumentative stoppers, i.e., there comes occasionally a point when Augustine does not use intellectual arguments anymore, but just states what is right and has to be believed. I venture that he does this at points where he thinks that argument is futile or too difficult. It would be interesting to investigate this further. For instance, at which point does he still use arguments and where not, and why? In this commentary, his opponent is also assumed to be fictitious. Often pagan philosophers or natural scientists, but sometimes also heretics, or in particular Christians made uncertain by pagan or heretical criticism. In contrast to the City of God, we find in De Genesi ad Literam hardly any explicit references to pagan writings, like for instance Virgil's Aeneid. Sometimes anti-heretical argument comes in as being relevant, sometimes as being out of date. As in the City of God, Augustine is meticulous in discussing a variety of solutions to a problem, readily admitting that sometimes a plurality of interpretations is possible, that sometimes he cannot offer a solution, and that sometimes others or later generations will come up with something better. Scholarship has rightly highlighted the aporetic character of this commentary. Also remarkable in De Genesi ad Literam is a relatively high number of explicit methodological reflections. Augustine shows explicit awareness of the apologetic versus the dogmatic line of argument. I quote, "The Catholic faith prescribes and reason indubitably teaches. Faith and rational grounds agree in the case of Basil the Great. What he said, you see, is not against the faith and can also be readily accepted when the grounds for it are set out. Although Christians, strictly speaking, have no time for such questions like, for instance, cosmology, because they are not relevant for salvation, such questions still have to be answered as they threaten to weaken the Christian cause." He says, "And what is so vexing is not that misguided people should be laughed at, as that our authors should be assumed by outsiders to have held such views, and to the great detriment of those about whose salvation we are so concerned, should be written off and consigned to the wastepaper basket as so many ignoramuses." So he's worried that puffed-up pagan intellectuals make weaker brothers and sisters insecure. His apologetic method for De Genesi ad Literam is several times explicitly formulated. I quote, "So we should show that whatever pagan philosophers have been able to demonstrate from reliable sources about the world of nature is not contrary to our literature, while whatever they may have reproduced from any of their volumes that is contrary to this literature of ours, that is, to the Catholic faith, we must either show with some ease or else believe without any hesitation to be entirely false. And we should so hold on to our mediator, in whom are stored up all the treasures of wisdom and of knowledge, that we are neither seduced by the chatter of false philosophy, nor frightened out of our wits by the superstitions of false religion." He argues in the same vein a bit later in the commentary, "Our business now, after all, is to inquire how God's scriptures say he established things according to their proper natures, and not what he might wish to work in them or out of them as a miracle of his power." He also turned the accusation of irrational polemics towards his opponents. "Such people do not acknowledge the authority of our literature and are ignorant of the way in which that was said, and so they are more likely to poke fun at the sacred books than to repudiate what they have come to hold by reasoned arguments or have proved by the clearest experiments." The traumatic event of the sack of Rome in 410 caused both pagans and Christians to doubt the legitimacy and power of the Christian God to protect the Roman Empire, indeed the world, from disaster. Especially in the first books of the City of God, Augustine uses concrete negative events in connection with this attack, like, for instance, the rape of women, especially of nuns, to counter criticism of the weakness of the Christian God and the Christian faith. He then widens his argument to become less ephemeral and more general. By using a historical approach, Augustine implicitly claims that the answer to a historical crisis lies in an appropriate understanding of the historical existence and development of states, communities, institutions, human lives and deeds, and everything else. Especially in the second half of the City of God, Augustine uses historical narrative as a confirmation of his argument, as a positive Christian illustration of issues that pagan systems of belief or philosophy were not able to handle satisfactorily. Augustine tackles the pagan accusation that the Christian God proves to be ineffective or even disastrous in human history by choosing a universal historical approach. This enables Augustine not only to embed virtually all major apologetic arguments used before him, but to illustrate the counterstatement that it is the incarnation that gives sense to history. That is, instead of being ineffective in history, the Christian God shapes and validates human history. This history has a linear purpose rather than a cyclical or fractured structure. It claims the unity of one single coherent human community across time and space, divided in the City of God and the earthly city, and with faith and eschatological hope, rather than certainty of knowledge as the present condition of human life. these are the main pillars of his vision of history. Whatever it is that the blessed will experience in their union with God, that is life. And what we now experience is metaphor or prefiguration, even though language tries to make it the other way round. As a conviction of faith, this is not new, but as an apologetic argument, this had never been developed so extensively and so stringently before Augustine. He claims this as the only adequate hypothesis to explain the ways of the world. His historical approach throughout the City of God is apologetic in so far as his implicit and explicit claim is that the historical event of the Incarnation changed human history forever. In another work entitled Against Heresies, Augustine makes the point that not only pagans, but also all heresies can be found out because they all question the historicity of the Incarnation. In the City of God, Augustine most notably counters this by explaining the effectiveness of Christian salvation throughout the entire history of the world. This strategy itself presets the agenda of the argument, as he thereby annihilates all other possible interpretations of history and proves the veracity of the Christian faith by extracting it from all historical development. It is in fact the Christian God that has performed and is still performing the economy of salvation throughout history and reality. Thus, Augustine's universal defensive apology is transformed into a universal assertive historiography. On a smaller scale, already earlier apologies had presented affirmative arguments to prove Christianity's superiority above other religions and philosophies. But Augustine's historical approach is new and surpasses historical arguments of other earlier apologists who were rather busy proving the superior age of Christianity in comparison to pagan traditions, the historical success of Christianity as proof of its God-sent veracity, and similar arguments. Nor does Augustine follow a pagan tradition that regarded history as a teacher, presenting a collection of moral examples to be rejected or to be imitated by later generations. But for Augustine, history has to be interpreted in the light of the Christian message. Thus, like in his hermeneutical approach to the Bible, he does consider both the Bible and history not as imitating or mimetic, but as signifying, as pointing towards a higher truth. History is a meaningful sequence of episodes revealing a divine purpose. A similar strategy can be observed in De Genesi ad Literam. As already demonstrated, Augustine does not confine himself to one clearly defined opponent, but tackles issues as they come along. The mode of interpretation argumentation is dictated by the criticism opponents could bring to this text. He tackles fundamental questions like cosmology, the human soul, grace, predestination, the nature of human beings, their place in creation, and their relationship with God. Instead of a history of salvation, as in the City of God, one could talk here in the Genesi ad Literam of an anthropology of salvation. One way of universalizing the meaning of Scripture is allegorizing its text, thus widening its impact from telling a single historical event to having concrete and contemporary relevance to a potentially universal readership. Augustine does attempt to prove the truth of Christianity from the fulfillment of what was promised in the Old Testament. This permits him to engage in a mystical or allegorical interpretation of virtually any text of the Old Testament. While this form of exegesis may be helpful for Christian spirituality, it creates some difficulties in apologetics, inasmuch as it depends on interpretations that are not evident, except, perhaps, to those who are previously convinced that Christ is the fulfillment of the law and the prophets. And it is precisely this apologetic problem that Augustine attempts to counter with a mixed interpretation of the Old Testament, i.e. combining allegorical with literal explanations. This can, for instance, be clearly observed in his interpretation of how to understand the paradise narrative. Augustine asserts that there are not a few people that deny the literal existence of paradise altogether and wish to understand it purely allegorically. Augustine admits that such an interpretation is possible, i.e. to understand the paradise narrative as a moral allegory of the life of the blessed. He adds that an ecclesiological interpretation of paradise as the church is also possible, as well as other interpretations. So Augustine leaves the possibility of multiple readings of Scripture open and allows for progress and better understanding by future readers. Moreover, he stresses the legitimacy of the allegorical interpretation. In The City of God, he does not expound further the literal meaning, but he refers the reader to De Genesi ad Literam, where he offers a more detailed analysis of the paradise narrative. He diversifies that some people consider the paradise account only to be literal, others only to be spiritual, others both, and confesses to belong to this latter group. So again, he illustrates his understanding of Scripture as history and prophecy. For instance, Adam was both a physical human being and also the prefiguration of Christ. Despite the fact that paradise seems to be an unusual entity and something that does not occur today anymore, this is not an argument against its factual existence earlier on. Augustine makes it clear that he argues here especially against people who believe in Scripture but want to maintain only a spiritual sense. But even against the Manichees, who do not believe in the validity of the paradise account at all, he wants to defend its literal sense in a way that they may find no grounds at all on which to deny this. Augustine does not mind if the paradise account is also taken spiritually, but he insists that the literal sense has to be maintained, as otherwise the beginning of humankind altogether is put in question, if, for instance, Cain and Abel are also interpreted as only figurative. Now I come to some concluding remarks. As already mentioned, similar to satire, apologetics cannot just be linked to a specific literary genre, but is also a technique or mode of thought to be encountered in all sorts of literary genres. this process of adopting an opponent's categories or criteria in one's argument does not only mean the representation of Christian thinking in a pagan or other critical mode, but also the transformation of the opponent's thoughts into a Christian worldview. The method is relatively flexible and follows the rules of ancient rhetoric, with the aim of persuasion. It has to be closely linked to the nature of the opponent. Persuasion in this context does not only mean to defend one's own position, but also to assert its superiority over all others. Apologetics is particularly needed in times of transition and change, in perceived and actual crisis and conflict, where the intellectual preoccupation is more with history than with metaphysics. There are opponents, but there also has to be a group of defenders with a sufficient educational standard to be able to conduct the discussion with rational arguments, instead of, for instance, physical force. Having the skill both to communicate with the thought system of the opponent and to express their own conviction, at least to a certain degree, along that thought system. As the nature of the Christian faith is to live in constant suspense, this genre has a timeless agenda, continuing through the ages, also allowing for self-correction from time to time. Augustine goes even so far to concede that, for instance, heretics with their critical questions dynamically trigger orthodox readings of the Bible. I quote, "Thanks to heretics, the Catholic faith has been clearly enunciated, and in reaction to people with wrong opinions, those with right opinions have been tested and approved. Many truths were contained in the scriptures in an obscure way, and the heretics, after being cut off, rocked God's church with their questions. But this served to lay open hidden truths, and so God's will came to be understood better." Apologetics has to face certain inherent tensions in its very way of proceeding. First, despite a deep-rooted distrust or even denial of human reason as being able to represent God and his divine purpose in an adequate way, apologetic uses this rational method mainly in order to engage intellectually with opponents to satisfy inquiries based on reason. Secondly, and connected with it, is the problem of how far apologetics is willing to yield to the demands of the opponents and to accept their criteria or metaphysical view of the world. The extreme poles between which apologetics can move here are, on the one hand, the more or less complete loss of Christian identity, or, on the other hand, apologetics can risk the more or less complete fundamentalist overwhelming of those opponents by hammering in certain convictions. Every apologetic effort has to find its position within these two poles. That the views of our opponents dictate our inquiry is something that Augustine rather applauded than feared. He managed thus to produce highly original and timeless work, as his super apology, The City of God, easily demonstrates. On the other hand, the danger of a fundamentalist fixation is reflected in Augustine's statement quoted in the title of my lecture, for understanding is the reward of faith. It is not understanding or intellectual activity that leads to faith, but faith is the basis or normative horizon for understanding. Faith is not exhausted or exhaustible through intellectual activity, but such activity is part of it. Faith is not unintellectual. And that allows us to explore, negotiate, and reformulate the fundamentals of that faith, especially in situations of controversy. And this is something Augustine has done for over 40 years in an enormous oeuvre which we all here appreciate so much. Thank you very much for your attention.
Professor Pohlmann, thank you very much for your thought-provoking and inspiring lecture, which has shown clearly the innovative approach of the apologetics developed by St. Augustine to justify faith, to give a rational foundation to to his faith, to his experience of faith, which he found its fulfillment in faith rather than reason alone. I think St. Augustine, as you have outlined, is indeed a model also for contemporary world in showing that disagreement in worldviews, in Weltanschauungs, in approaches, is not a disaster, but rather an opportunity for further discussions in trying to discover and rediscover new dimensions of faith through reason. Professor Pohlmann, I would like to thank you and express my heartfelt thanks and appreciation for accepting to give this lecture and to visit Malta just a few weeks ago. Reverend Dr. Salvino Caruana, who is the director of the Augustinian Institute and the founder of this annual event, planned to invite you for next academic year. But due to unforeseen circumstances, the invited speaker declined to come, and you accepted to replace him just a few weeks ago. Thank you very much.
Campus FM għadukan waslilkom lekċer organizzata mill-Istitut Agostinjan bit-titlu For Understanding is the Reward of Faith, Augustine as an Apologist. Il-kellima tal-lekċer kienet il-professoressa Carla Pohlmann.